Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this.
I kicked it. Here it goes.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Wednesday, and another edition of Soma Time. I'm your host, the Culture Vulture, Dr. Mark. Number to call to get on the line, 646-478-4847. I'm just peeling the yolk of another late-inning Met defeat. You know, the Mets have done a couple of things to me in the last 2 weeks. They've proven that I'm definitely in need of some type of 12-step program because the losses that they've endured in the last week and a half to the Cincinnati Reds and the lousy, stinking Washington Nationals, and even the loss I had to endure live in person Sunday to Tim Lincecum and the Giants, they're sticking in my ribs more. These are winnable games. And, you know, they're losing it. You know, home runs that hit foul poles and guys that have never hit a home run before in their life are hitting home runs off of my closer. I'm just, this is an open wine. I had to get this out of my system. It's 162 games. The last seven or eight, you know, have been annoying. So, anyway, I just had to get that out there to start the program. Lots to talk about again. This is one of those nights where, you know, you get to kind of take things in full perspective because tomorrow being the new moon, we are at the low point of our little ride through the lunar landscape of the Soma terrain. And anyone interested in my work? Now, what is my work anyway? I wish I knew what it was. I'll give you a little idea. I'm going to kind of confess. I started out as a chiropractor way back in the woebegotten days of the early 90s, you know, when, you know, Kurt Cobain was alive, things like that. And when I got out into, as they affectionately call it, the field, I always think of, like, releasing, you know, wild animals into an open prairie. And the chiropractors are released into the field. You know, I walk smack dab into managed care. Pow! And, you know, once managed care's around, right behind them will be Batman. And I within a year, they have me by their clutches.
You filthy criminals.
Yeah. And not long after managed care, we had Hillary Care. Hello! Hello! And, you know, by 1994, I was singing a song.
Back a bad liver and a broken heart.
Yeah, because as a wellness guy in the early 90s, you were sort of, let's just say, on the outside looking in on most things. So I just started peeling off the layers, man. Stop taking workers' comp. Stop taking personal injury cases. Stop taking Medicare cases. Squirrels, I said. Oh, they heard me. So for the next 5 years, I was on my belly, dodging the bullets, as it were, as they came after me with both cannons. They didn't like the fact that I was leaving the little tribe there. I'm talking about the chiropractors. I'm only talking about the medical doctors now. And by the late 90s, I had to get into research, thinking that at least the scientists will be, you know, giving me a fair shake. And what I found out is science is nothing more than politics, you know, with a lab coat on it. And a lot of the stuff that happened in research in the late 90s, and the whole decade of neuroscience went by like a picket fence, and the chiropractors were still basically practicing a model that was more based on economics than based on biology. They just weren't doing their jobs, and I was calling them out on it every chance I had, because...
You filthy criminies.
...were getting me associated with them on levels that I didn't want to be associated on, because I didn't like what the way they were doing their job. I didn't like it. Didn't like it one bit. And I got involved in a lot of stuff in the political part of chiropractic. So, long story short, the last 12 years or so, I've been slowly but surely migrating out of the clinical world, and the last 5 years exclusively have operated on the fringe bubble of it, where you hear this song a lot.
Boozy, boozy, bop, city bop.
And for the last 3 years, I've been yapping to you guys every Wednesday night about something called the Four Domains. And while we have a minute here before we get into the news, so I got to say, where did all that start? Well, when I wrote my paper, which was sort of a Declaration of Independence, a research paper, back late 90s again, I got into the dichotomy that was in the field at that point, where there was basically two camps. And you can think of them as ice cream flavors. You can think of them anything you want, right? One was very biomechanical, very literal, very much on the side of the coin of being extremely minimal in their approach. They were just going to focus on restoring, you know, the proper posture and biomechanics and working on something called the subluxation, which I'm not going to bore you with. The other side was much more trying to be primary care providers that are, you know, did musculoskeletal work. And they focused on the 40 common conditions. They wanted to be GPs. So you had vanilla and you had your chocolate. In the middle, I like chocolate, believe me. In the middle was the pistachio nut, being me, saying, you know, you can't take the physiology out of the common conditions, and you can't take, you know, the structural stuff over here that these guys are talking about in the chocolate camp. So I took approach in the middle that said, why don't we look at something called attention? Now think about how much money has been spent in the last 15 years, say, on the study of attention from every angle, from seniors dealing with their brains rotting, with little kids coming up to the ranks and having all kinds of difficulty with their brains developing for a variety of reasons. Everything that goes on in the middle, which is where I live now in the land of social stress. We live in a world of distraction, and it's called bionomic adaptation. So I got into those camps, rooted around like a little spy, and I came up with my paper and came up with my system of looking at the soma, which is the relationship of self and surroundings, okay? And there's different levels of attention. The two primary ones that 80% of us are using right now are basically focusing on relationships, which is our philosomatic attention, you and me you and me, the biology of connection. And then the other one is ontosomatic, which is much more of a survival rhythm, self-preservation, really trying to reinforce your separate your distinction from the world, that you're an individual. And the culture does both. The culture keeps preaching relationship, individuate. Relationship, individuate. That's 80% of it. The other 20%, which tonight we're going to be spending in the exo realm, is where all the fun is, because that's where the gaps are in our ways of dealing with each other, vis-a-vis ecosomatic, which deals with our emotional rhythms, and then our exosomatic, which deals with our rational rhythms, how we structure things, how we organize things, how we categorize things, how we label things, and how we lie about things. Because when you're exo about it, it all sounds logical. And you don't have to, it's like it's the Costanza thing from Seinfeld. It's not a lie if you believe it. So take a look at that in the tutorial here in a minute. But first up, Obama was at it again this week with a big Supreme Court decision, you know, appointment, whatever you want to call it. And I've been confused about the response to this person, by the way. Let me just see if I can get a news story on it, because there's been so much going on the last couple of days here.
And it really is kind of indicative of the way almost every one of these appointments go. I mean, it really has become almost like a popularity contest within itself. And again, she's someone that, you know, let's just see if I can get something new here quick. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got the Phillies got caught sniping on people. Oh, it's great. So Lana Kagan here, Senators query Supreme Court nominee Kagan. This is this is the most updated stuff from this morning. Boy, okay. Anyway, if anyone's seen Lana Kagan on TV, I still think that we're looking at a combination of Rosie O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow up there. But that's me. She's overqualified. It's just like Sotomayor. She's overqualified for this job. She's too good. And anytime you see this, and this is something maybe we'll talk about our guest in a little bit. Actually, I just spoke to Dave Lacani a little bit. He's going to be joining us at 9:30 to share his thoughts on all these things that we've been kind of riffing on the last couple of weeks. We kind of missed each other last week. He was stuck in an airplane. Is this tendency to sort of push away things that are not common in the culture? So if you're intellectual, you know, if you're innovative, if you look different, if you act different, everybody gets marginalized. And no different with her. No different with her. It's been the same story. But it seems like she's going to get through. I think they're going to have to deal with her. Let's see if they got anything new up here on her. Let's see. Everybody's nice and smiley face about it right now. Because you got to realize the Congress is on pins and needles here with the elections going on. So nobody wants to fall on the wrong side of this. But, you know, so far, so good, it looks like. If confirmed to replace Justice John Paul Stevens, Kagan will be the only current member of the court who did not previously serve on an appeals court judge. There was some stuff about a thing she wrote for Clinton a while ago. It's just such nitpicky crap. You know, familiar spectacle. Here we go. At the start of each meeting, dozens of reporters entered the Kagan smiled and bobbed her head. It's not clear if Kagan is offering a repetition of platitudes. Back then, she called for the Senate to explore the essential rightness and legitimacy and desirability of exploring Supreme Court nominees' set of constitutional views and commitments. Nominees generally don't answer pointed questions, arguing their answers could prejudice them if they heard a potential case. Such a weird thing about the Supreme Court. You know, in their effort to be objective, they're so, it's like they're all wrapped up. I can't make my mind about that. So anyway, if you got any thoughts about her or the way that they the press treated her, you know, we can get into that a little bit before we get going here. That's one big story this week. The other one is the big BP hearings special, and it was good for me because it gave me my my tutorial here. Let's see if I can. It's a weird day today, you know. Facebook's acting up. I don't know. Everything's kind of strange. All right, let's see if I can find this thing. All right, here it is, the tutorial. And we had this guy. It was great because it was EXO versus EXO. You had Senator Maria Cantel, and you had the BP American president and chairman Lamar McKay talking about this Gulf disaster. See if I can give it. It's about a couple minutes of this. If you can just in your head when you listen to this, just track this guy's voice tone and see if it ever goes up or down. It's amazing. He's getting questions on a multi-billion dollar disaster, and look unflappable this guy is. It's amazing.
Okay, just going back to you, although
dip in here in a second. Rhea's warming up here.
Chime in here, but it literally was just last year that the last part.
And if you see this on C-SPAN or something like that, or on YouTube,
I mean, it was a 20-year process.
Classic. Nobody has a facial expression.
So, Mr. McKay, are you saying you're going to avoid that by paying legitimate claims in advance? I know you can't stop anybody from suing you, but are you saying you're going to pay legitimate claims in advance of any court process?
We are paying legitimate claims right now, and so, yes, I am. And obviously, we can't keep from being sued, but, yes, we have said exactly what we mean. We're going to pay the legitimate claims.
Okay, so if it's a legitimate claim, a harm to the fishing industry, both short-term and long-term, you're going to pay?
We're going to pay all legitimate claims.
If it's an impact for business loss from tourism, you're going to pay?
We're going to pay all legitimate claims.
To state and local governments for lost tax revenue, you're going to pay?
question mark.
Long-term damages to the Louisiana fishing industry and its brand.
I can't quantify or speculate on long term. I don't know how to define it.
Additional troubles from depleted fisheries to recovery.
We're going to pay all legitimate claims.
Shipping impacts.
Legitimate claims.
Impacts on further drilling operations. I'm talking about things now that were part of the Exxon Valdez. So I guess what I'm saying is I think the American people are most anxious about this. And I guess let me just go back. OPA 90 set into a framework, a process, that basically said here's the liability and here's the framework. So we obviously only have so much money in that. I know my colleagues think we're going to raise that, but to make that retroactive is nearly impossible. And so you're stepping up today at a hearing with probably the best advice money can buy behind you with PR and legal teams, and I'm sure they're saying, let's say that we're going to pay. And so I want to make sure that we really understand what you are saying you are going to be committed to today, because the long-term impacts of this is going to be for 20 years, and we cannot sustain this kind of behavior or cost, and I want to make sure that we're getting full answers to the coverage that you are really signing up for today.
I'm trying to give you as clear an answer as I possibly can. We are trying to be extremely responsive, expeditious, meet every responsibility we have as a responsible party, and that means pay all legitimate claims. And so
All right. Enough of you, Lamar.
I can't speculate on every individual.
Well, Mr. Spicoli, I don't know. That's all you get out of that. That was the most, it was like a card game. She was going to try and make him crack, and he was basically going to say, legitimate claims. That's EXO, guys. If you ever want to see it, 9% of the population has that guy's brain, and believe me, he needed every ounce of it, every synapse of it, to withstand that growing, because she's basically telling you, you're full of crap, you're going to say it, and you're not going to do it, aren't you? But she was EXO too, so it comes across as flat. It's like rolling a tennis ball back and forth. There was no emotion, there was nothing. It was two people rationalizing everything away. It was amazing. Flabbergasting. Dead fish and birds everywhere. This is what we're getting out of this. Hey, Dios mío. On the other side of the fence, we have a classic example of how other brains work. Let's see if I can dig that up here quickly. On Sunday, we had a little bit of a event there in Oakland on Mother's Day. Guy whose mother passed away. And pitched a perfect game.
Dallas,
and he was on Letterman a couple nights ago talking about it. Dallas Braden with a little different angle on things. Here we go.
In the history of the game,
on Letterman, an EXO show.
We have your top 10 list tonight. Thoughts that went through your mind while you were throwing that perfect game. If you're ready, I'm ready.
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Here we go. Number 10.
Grandma's right. Stick it, A-Rod.
Yeah. There you go. Good for Grandma. Number 9.
I did it. Oh, crap, it's only the fourth inning.
Whoops. Number 8.
Seriously, how cool a name is Dallas Braden?
Yeah, you're right about that.
What the hell? That was 50 seconds. All right, this one has the whole thing, I think. Who puts on 3 of them?
Showtime brings you the very... Showtime,
you're killing me, Showtime. Right. Anyway, there's Dallas Braden with a little bit of an attitude. He's an onto. We'll get into that in a couple weeks. But basically, a lot more attitude than what he's saying, right? That's all I'm talking about here. See, I want to get to some of the juicy ones at the top of the list. 15 commercials on this damn thing. Do you think I would screen this before I get on the air? But no, I'm not paid to do this show. So you're going to get it raw from me. All right. Eventually, we're going to get to some top 10 here. All right, see if I can scroll through. Scrolling, he's scrolling. Flippy is scrolling along. There's a lot going on here. Wow. It's like a 4-minute clip. All right, let's
Let's see, we'll pull it up.
The game that must make you feel pretty good. We have your top 10 list tonight.
Right, he's doing it again.
That went through your mind.
Take two, everybody.
Perfect game. If you're ready, I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm not ready. All right. Let me get to the. Here we go. Number seven.
Now maybe Justin Bieber will notice me.
Oh, let's keep our fingers crossed. Number six.
I must not tell the world I'm Iron Man.
Right. What? Wait a minute. Did he just say he's Iron Man?
Get out of the way.
Number five.
This is something.
Hold on. This just
said.
In. Somatic update. It is 5-2 Montreal, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are going belly up, baby. Wow. There's 9 minutes of change to go in the Mellon Arena. Site of many Ranger just absolutely just visceral, you know, just, oh, this is great. Oh, they've eliminated us so many years. The Penguins, I hate them, hate them, hate them. Now they're skating for their little hockey lives. Skate, Sydney, skate, you little rat. Here he comes. They almost put it in the net. All right, we're not gonna gild that lily. Back to our friend here, Dallas.
Away from me. But for $50,000, you can have my glove.
All right. What color glove do you use?
Black and gold.
Number four.
This next pitch, eyes closed.
Okay. Number three.
Even I've never heard of me.
What? Now, wait a minute. Oh, that's not possible. Number two.
I should at least give up one hit so I don't have to do Letterman.
Hey, wait a minute. Hey, I heard that. And the number one thought that went through Dallas Braden's mind while he's thrown his perfect game.
Maybe I can give Kate Hudson a call.
Yeah, maybe you can.
All right, Dallas Braden with the zingers. Da-da-da-da. All right. You know, you balance that with Betty White on Saturday night, you got a party there for yourself. All right, so there's those three big stories. Supreme Court, BP hearings, Dallas Braden sticking it to A-Rod once again. Perfect. Unbelievable. So in the remaining 10 minutes here, I'm going to take a little look over here on my Twitter feed. Oh, look at this. So much going on tonight. You know, it's one of those nights where I kind of feel like, uh-oh, Twitter is over capacity, too many tweets. Everybody calm down. I love when the little whale goes on Twitter. You know, it's always like an indication that the world is, you know, this is what we're reduced to. Little Twitter birds and a whale. But, you know, I wanted to get into some stuff over on the website. I've been striving. I've been begging, actually, the last couple days. Someone please figure out. I took the time to take the two dimensions of my work, which is profiling in the four domains, as we mentioned. You can go to soberspace.org and check it out. We talked about all four of them a minute ago. And the other side, which is really about vitality and a little bit of this woo stuff I'm talking about here, how we're all connected and, you know, living in the rhythm. And I made two different little fan pages things, as they call me there on the Facebook thing. And for the life of me, every time I post something on one of these things, it goes out to nobody. I don't know who's out there. Now, no one's signed up to be, you know, likey likes yet. I haven't just started doing the things. But I want to make it go to my regular Facebook page. No one can seem to tell me how to do this. I'm all over the Facebook trying to figure it out. So all I got to do, this is my life. I make the post, and then I have to share the post with myself. What good is that? See if anybody's out there poking around. Nobody's there. So we got less than 9 minutes to go there in Pittsburgh. This is shocking. I mean, this is an eighth seed. These Canadians that they would have beaten the Capitals and the Penguins. Wow. Meanwhile, the Flyers were beating the Bruins. That could go seven games too. Tomorrow night we got LeBron fighting for his life up there in Beantown as well, after he put out an absolute stinker of a performance last night. Worthy of being exiled from Cleveland. Now, if you're bad enough to be exiled from Cleveland, you've had a bad night. You've had a bad night. So, okay. Let's see what else we can do here for the next couple of minutes as we get ready for Dave Vicani. I'm looking back at all the disasters last week. We ran off about nine of them, okay? So if we just kind of review, we have the BP spill. Okay, we have the Times Square guy, right, which is still lingering around. There's still stuff going on with that. We had the Tennessee flood, right? We had that. We had the Arizona riots, you know, coming off of the law passing out there. We had a murder at the Virginia campus. Remember that? That was kind of, they put her to bed, and that was the end of that. I don't know. Did we cover much more than that? I'm trying to remember how many more of these things we had. There was a couple more. There had to be a couple more than that. There's only five. There's like nine of them. But the thing, the whole point of my argument here, the Greece things, that's right, Greece. We just had a big thing in Britain, you know, with their whole thing. They're running around. We had the Greece riots, you know. And the week before, we had the egg-throwing contest in the Ukraine. Greece was losing its mind. So we, you know, that's six, seven, I don't know. There was a lot of them, and, you know, it doesn't seem to stop in the sense that every time one of these things hits, like a big rock hitting a pond, you know, there's a little ripple, but we're so saturated with them that no matter how bad they are, we go on. I want to check it out, because I'm actually going to try and check this movie out this week, because I might as well see for myself. I want to see how much money Iron Man made last weekend. Iron Man 2. Let's see. If we go to the news, that should give me how much money it made. Let's see. Can Iron Man 2 whip? What? I just want to see how much money it made, damn it. So we look for that. We look for box office? I don't know. Completely out of my element here. Let's see. Oh my God, $133.6 million. So what if we balanced it out? That's a domestic debut. That's the fifth, the only the fifth best opening weekend of all time. Only the fifth best. That's amazing. Could you imagine this? That you make a movie, and a weekend later you have $133.6 million in your hands. Now, what if we did? What if we connected disaster relief to entertainment? We'd zero it out. This is amazing. I'm looking at this thing. The movie's supposed to be good. Of course. Iron Man's taken in $194 million overseas since it debuted international markets, bringing its worldwide total to $327 million. That's amazing. It just boggles my mind. How much can we, you know, absorb as a culture? The thing is, economy's down, everybody's dead, and then this movie's making, look, you know, you look at Avatar, people want entertainment at their fingertips. They love this stuff. They live for this stuff. The blockbusters are going to start coming out, and since we're living in a disaster, I just think that our outlets become more and more abstract. The movie theater might have to freaking explode soon to entertain us. It's amazing how much we can take in, how much our eyeballs can absorb. As I'm watching the end of this Penguin game, that stimulus response thing, it's kind of wired into us, you know, and we just seem to want more and more of it, so that you know, nothing seems to stop that train. So anyway, I want to get into that a little bit with Dave when he calls in, because I think as a culture we're at a nexus point where the technology and the terror and the time, the constancy of it all is sort of all cresting. And how many scandals can we follow at once? How many investigations can we absorb at once? How many Senate hearings can we process at once? So, all right, I see he's here. Let's see, let's get him up. Let's get him a proper introduction here. Get my St. Pine song. Okay. Joining us tonight from BaldePart.com, author of several books on lots of different topics, actually. We have Dave Cassani, joining us here in some time. All right, there. I don't know why I came in so loud. All right, so you out there, Dave?
I'm here. How are you today?
Oh, wow. Okay, you sound like you're flying above me here. You're on the ground this week, right?
I'm on the ground this week. I'm in Montreal, Canada, right across the street from the Bell Center. Where
you'll know before me when the game ends because they've been cutting back and forth. They have a full house over there watching a road game.
21,000 people, and I'm literally in the hotel directly across the street. It's about to turn into mayhem.
Mm. Yeah, you're gonna have a good time. I just was looked up when they made it 5-2, and the place is losing its mind. I thought we were on the air when they knocked the Caps out a couple weeks ago, and it was the same. I'm being a Ranger fan. I've never actually had any love for the Canadians, but when it comes to the Penguins, I'll make an exception. That Sidney Crosby cannot lose enough. He's like the Derek Jeter of hockey to me. I just can't stand the sight of the guy. But when it was 4-2, I was getting a little nervous because the Penguins are sort of like Jason. They just they score goals in bunches here. But and they got a power play here now, so it might get dicey down the stretch. But thanks for joining us tonight. We got like I was just saying, it's sort of at that point now where when you look at the way we interact with the culture and this social media platform, I did a show last week about Health 2.0 and how that little faction of what social media has become has really kind of stolen the conversation in terms of the way the internet deals with information, health information. But when it deals with like basically the mechanisms of the basic mechanisms of marketing, and if you go back even to the pre-2005, pre these platforms, when basically the world was still kind of whirring around a little slower, and you still had to do the old-fashioned, interruption marketing, and it was pop-up ads and things like that. Just get the empty net. And now we're in a situation now where Facebook itself is now so self-regulated by its own users that when they do something stupid and they get too aggressive, the users slap it down. Have the buyers become the regulatory function for what is going to be kosher in terms of a sales transaction, in terms of social media, and also face-to-face on the ground? Or is it just that we're so sensitive to being manipulated that that our threshold for being kind of jobbed is lower as a result of being, raked over the coals for so many years? We kind of see the bully coming.
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I think that people have sort of taken the position that they're tired of being intruded on, and so they're rejecting people and businesses and marketers who intrude on them in places that they find sacred. So that's one thing I think that's happening right now. I think the other thing is that people are becoming much more resistant, particularly in the last year and a half or 2 years, to BS. People's BS meters are on full alert. And, their reactions are set not to stun but kill. They don't want to be pushed too far. They don't want to be sold to in a very harsh way. And they have instant access to information. Let's face it, social media has given us the ability to find out exactly how somebody feels about any product, any service, in about 30 seconds. Name your product or your service. I can look on Twitter, and I can find good and bad about it immediately. It'll help me make a better decision. I can do it while I'm talking to the salesperson. I can ask him questions he probably can't answer because I have more current information than he does.
No, I believe you on that front, but why is it that we still appear to be pretty gullible? Because the same infomercials about, the ab chair and this and that, and they all still sell. Is it that people become impulsive about this stuff, or is it because the fact that there's that click whir kind of thing, that Robert Salandi influence kind of thing, where we're processing so many things. I had someone on a couple weeks ago that said that we absorb 10,000 advertisements a day, come at us, bombard us on a cultural level. Are we just so immersed in the, in the buy sell, atmosphere that we just sometimes our flaps are down, or is it that we love to chase the carrot? And that's why no matter what it is when it comes to addiction or when it comes to weight loss, we're constantly going to go for the catnip of the shortcut as part of our ethos, as part of our cultural way of doing things, because of the fact that if you could show me a before and after and at 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm eating my third slice of pizza, I'm going to go for this. Is it like a timing mechanism, a vulnerability thing? Because it just seems like those things continue to sell.
They continue to sell because everybody's looking for the magic pill, particularly in North America. And they're constantly looking for the shortcut. They're constantly looking for the easy way out. They're constantly looking for the quick buck. And people who are willing to say anything and, you know, to stretch the truth, to make things possible. I mean, let's face it. You know, when you look at a model sitting on an ab lounger doing, you know, 5 minutes of, you know, or 2 minutes of ab work a day, and
sure,
they've got perfect genetically sculpted abs, you know, everybody wants that to be true. And it looks like this might be the one thing. And if you're predisposed to that because you constantly try to lose weight and you think about it all the time, you're immersed in those thoughts all the time, chances of you trying it are very high, particularly when they take you through a very, very emotionally compelling process that leads you from point A to point B. There's nothing non-emotional about any infomercial. They're designed specifically to create different emotional highs and lows throughout that 30 minutes, and they're designed with one thing in mind, that's to get you to pick up the phone to talk to someone else who's going to sell you even harder.
So if our collective, like I said, our BS meters are high, our trust level is low, but our laziness and our emotional vulnerability is still just as high, how does the average, you know, small business person or salesperson, how do they wade through that terrain when multiple exposures gets them shut down, when, you know, all the other normal tactics of gaining access to somebody are seen as invasions, as you're saying, yet because of social media, the interactivity is constant. It just seems like it's almost like you have to sort of tiptoe to the tulips here.
Well, what you have to do is you have to be seen to sell. So what you have to do is become the most visible and the most knowledgeable and the most desirable seller or engaged person with your product or service. Now you have to be seen as the person who provides more value, more content, more ideas, more help, more service up front in advance before people are going to engage with you as easily. Sure, you can still, you know, you can still hard sell people, and sometimes it works, but it doesn't work as well as it did before, not by a long shot. But ultimately what does work now is when people become the dominant expert in their area, when they become seen so they can sell, when people trust them because they've seen them provide support back to their community, seen them being involved, seeing them connecting with other people, seeing them do things proactively without asking for anything in return. Those are the kind of things that are starting to make a big difference, and that's how salespeople cut through the clutter. You know, yelling louder isn't going to help. Pushing harder isn't going to help. What's going to help is giving people the information they need, being honest, being transparent. Those are two buzzwords we hear a lot these days, but the reality of it is that it's true. That people are looking, you know, because the truth will be found out about you very, very quickly if you don't tell the truth. So people are doing those things. So the people who come out and display themselves truthfully, honestly, are the ones who are succeeding now.
And so if you're coming from one of these industries that's been hit pretty hard, like if you're selling cars, or
mm-hmm.
say you're one of these pharmaceutical companies that had all these childhood, over-the-counter meds that taken off the market, and there's been a real hit to your credibility factor, and you have
mm-hmm.
to repair your image. If you're going about it the way you're saying, it comes down to some pretty obvious people skills here, because you have to admit something went wrong and then try to recommit at the same time. And what I see happening, because of the fact that the fear and the anger is so, so obvious in the culture right now, in the marketplace, is that there's a polarity response. It's almost like a pushback where the more they go to apologize, the more guilty they look. Where if they just go about their business and don't feed into it, and say, you know, that was a bad batch, we've had a 20-year record, you know, almost the way the guy, the BP guy, did on the thing I was just playing here. Or he's, you know, we'll pay for legitimate claims. We're not gonna get emotional about it. And no matter how many times the senator would hammer him on it, you know, what about the beaches? What about the fish? Well, if it's a legitimate claim, we'll pay. Is it much more about being, you know, sort of matter of fact about it, or is it more about engaging with people on a passionate level about your product to the point where they get just as passionate as you?
It's about engaging people and getting them passionate and getting them to be the people who go out and be the evangelists. You know, if you make a mistake, you have to say it. You say it, you face up to it, you get done with it, you move on. And that's, you know, people, of course, some people are going to attack you and they're going to want to drag you into the fray. But jumping into the fray and trying to appease every single person isn't going to do anything. It's not going to solve the problem. What you say is, this is the truth, this is how it is, here's how we're solving the problem, and now we're moving on. And then you just dive in and move on.
So, if you're looking at it from the standpoint of the way the culture's been sort of, I think, kind of resurfaced in the last year and a half, where this issue of transparency and the total lack of trust for government and banks and
Mm-hmm.
Almost everything you could name, every big fish you could name, airlines,
right.
whatever.
Which, let's face it, they did to themselves.
Yeah, well, yeah, they was definitely, they stayed too long at the party. Has the consumer become, you know, so almost kind of like almost to the point where they're so hard to please, whereas as the seller or as the marketer, you're sort of in a almost like an apologetic kind of mode all the way to get them to just stick for you stick it out for a little while. I see more gyms around here, you know, free membership for 2 years. You know, it's almost like, how do you make commerce work when everything is about giving away content? I've seen newspapers closing up around here. With Newsweek is taking a hit now, and they're going away. Montreal just sewed it up, guys. See.
Well, you know, here's the thing. It's not about being apologetic. It's not about all of those things. It's about... Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, it's official.
Right.
The Penguins are dead. So how is that work then? I'm confused, because it's one of those things I see people just almost going overboard to give things away to win
right.
back
well,
their marketplace.
Because there's this idea that everything has to be free. They keep hearing this thing about the Internet, everything should be free, everything should be free, everything should be free. And the reality of it is you don't have to be apologetic, and it's not that the consumers have gotten that much more aggressive. It's simply that consumers have gotten that much more demanding about not being lied to, about not being, you know, not being told. You know, let's face it, marketing has been very, very manipulative for a very long time. They say, you know, and particularly when you look at things like business opportunities, when you look at things like diets, when you look at things like, you know, pseudo medication, vitamins, minerals, you know, vitamins that will get you, you know, that will improve your sex life, grow you better breasts, all of those kind of things. People have been so bombarded with that kind of, you know, illegitimate BS, if you will, that they're now saying, listen, critical thinking counts. I'm going to ask harder questions. You're going to be able to provide me with the answers. I'm going to do my research ahead of time. And I'm going to be a much more educated and direct consumer. If you don't tell me the truth, I'm going to know you're not telling me the truth. And the reality of it is that a lot of people don't know how to market in the new economy. So they go back to what they think will work. Oh, let's offer 2 years of free gym memberships. And those kind of models don't work. They can if they have another, you know, if they have a full model built around it, and that's just a lead generation tool. But most people don't. They think, oh, we'll do it for free. We'll figure out how to make money on the back end. We'll sell them more drinks inside. We'll charge them a quarter for their locker every time they turn the key, whatever it is. But it doesn't ultimately work. What works is building a sound, effective business using solid marketing, solid sales techniques, making sure that you build a community and that you're the most visible person in that community and that you're the leader in the, you know, to the group of people who follow you. And you get those people so enthused and so engaged that they can't not go out and tell their small circle of close friends, who will then also become engaged, enthused consumers and do the same again and again and again. And so social media has become the new, it's become the new model for how marketing works, not necessarily how marketing is applied.
Okay, that's a big distinction, because my next question was more about the sort of the tonality of the content. I've just seen in the last month, and maybe it's just because of the nature of the beast and all things have been going on, is that the emphasis or the gas pedal's been much more on negativity and like I said, this kind of disaster porn, where the Schadenfreude, you know, oh, look what's going on in Greece, look at those terrible things over there, oh, well, look, they're throwing eggs at the guy in the Ukraine, oh, look, British government's falling apart, and all these things that are sort of like basically distant from our day-to-day lives. Even the Gulf thing is very distant from our day-to-day lives, but because of the fact that it just creates this kind of atmosphere of, you know, just everything seems very tenuous, everything seems very, very volatile. If you watch any of the financial things in the morning, I mean, for the first 2 hours, from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, all they talk about is what's wrong. And so it just seems like the market has changed from stiff upper lip to, you know, assume the crash position. And then they cut the commercial, and it's really cool. It's like a dance. They'll scare you for 10 minutes, and then the advertisements are all about, you know, antacids and stuff. So it's like it just seems like the old school that's still operating from the semi-mainstream media, cable news, things like that, still has that kind of keyboard of scare them and sell them, scare them and sell them. And to me, that alienates the public. I don't know how that engages them to tell them a whole bunch of bad news and then
well,
get them
the problem
up this biz.
the problem is that people are still attuned to those things. You know, we're still very moved by, you know, we're still moved by moving pictures. We're still moved by the movies, by television, by people in authority, you know, authority figures on television. And television moves people better than anything else. So, you know, but the problem with it is people get number and number to the emotional content, but they still react to it because they're afraid not to. And so the reality of it is that the reason that they tell the news that way is because it still works. You know, you still lead with the thing that's going to shock people and cause them to come back after the commercial. They're still using a model.
Bleeds it leads. That was the old phrase. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right.
So and again, from a marketing standpoint, hand to hand combat with your marketplace, it still seems to be problem solution. You know that old formula of talk about a problem, offer a solution, and then you know jump in and make the sale, or at least begin the sales process. If it's still about vulnerability, still about finding the holes in the cheese, how do you build a lasting relationship with your client if you always have to look for something that's sort of like, you know, their weak spot instead of
you build a lasting relationship by being seen as the one that they can trust, the person who's going to filter for them. See, the best thing that a good marketer can be is a strong filter of the truth. So they take in all the information, they tell people what they're hearing, what they're feeling, and then they tell them the truth. And they say, this is what you should be thinking, this is what you should be looking at, here's what really works, here's what you do. And when you have trust and credibility, then you become the leader and the person that they're thinking about.
All right, so again, if you're operating from, you're selling, you know, vaccines from Baxter Labs, and you've been accused of everything from bioterrorism to, you know, cooking the formula there for the H1N1 vaccine, and you're going out in the field, you know, to get your product out to the doctors, and they have this basically sitting on their desk or sitting on their iPhone. How do you get past, you know, that moat of this is what happened? And you could say you could admit it, but there's going to be something coming from you know above you or behind you that says don't tell them this, tell them that. And when you see talking points, and you see it a lot, you know. Politics does it, you know, it happens a lot in entertainment when there's a scandal, anytime there's one of these, you know, whatever these marriage scandals are, PR. The publicist says this, how do you, even when athletes deal with injury, things like that, how do you deal with the secrecy when you're saying transparency and being brutally honest is the only way to kind of build that bridge?
Well, yeah, either people will or they won't. And, you know, spin works for a while. But the problem with spin is that people immediately point it out now. So, you know, I don't care how good you are at spinning things. I don't care how good you are at trying to hide things. You can't anymore. So eventually they'll learn and they'll realize that they have to do things differently. And until they do, they'll continue to get battered around. They'll continue to do the same kind of things that don't work. And they become the daily fodder of people who care to talk about this. And we're still talking about a fairly small group of people who talk about things on the internet, who are on Twitter. I mean, when you look at the total population,
right.
You know, it's a small population who are actively using Twitter, actively using Facebook, and actively using social medias. People still rely on things like radio, television, to, you know, to get their information, and they expect to see things in a certain format. But until these people say, listen, we're going to be honest, we're going to be truthful, this is the way it is, this is what we're doing, and that's the end of it. You know, it will continue, but for the people who are smart, the people who are savvy, they'll do it the other way. And the people, even that small group of people who are using Facebook, LinkedIn, the internet, in whatever ways they are, Twitter, what will happen is those people will take it and they'll spread it to their face-to-face networks, they'll spread it to their online networks, and that will ultimately dominate much more quickly than somebody trying to constantly spin, reset, and spin.
Yeah, now, Dave, you took a little whirlwind tour the last year and a half around the country when everybody was basically still feeling the effects of the unemployment and a lot of people ended up in tent cities and you dealt with that face-to-face. As you traveled the country, did you see any kind of a pattern, whether it was generationally or regionally or socioeconomic background, or who were the ones that you, when you looked at them eye to eye, you knew were going to get out of that hole and the ones that were going to basically be in there for a while?
The people who were affected?
Yeah, the ones that you visited directly.
You know, it was the people who were still trying to do something, the people who didn't give up, you know, or the people that, even when times are really bad, were still out, going out, trying to find a job, trying to find something to do, who were willing to work hard. You know, people who are willing to dig themselves, you know, dig their way out of the trench are the people that are going to do well. And there were a lot of people who lost jobs and those kind of things, who, you know, who meant to do very well, and they kept trying. They moved. They did whatever it took to succeed. You know, my own brother is a good example. After 16, almost 17 years with the same construction company, a large national company, lost his job. You know, instead of just sitting around on unemployment, you know, he went out and built a business buying and selling things on Craigslist. You know, he figured out how to build a business to replace his income. And it wasn't easy at first, and, you know, he didn't make a lot of money at first, but now he's doing great. He just created something new. And that's the real opportunity that exists now, is to create something new. See, what really happened is a lot of those people said, enough. I've had enough. I'm not going to rely on a corporation. I'm not going to rely on someone else for my livelihood. I'm going to rely on me. I'm going to make that happen. And they did. You know, people who made a decision to go live in a tent city because they, you know, or there's a woman online right now who, I'm going to tell you her name in just one second, and I'm going to tell you the name of her blog. The name of her blog is The Boxcar Kids Blog. And so if you go to theboxcarkids.wordpress.com, you can read about this woman. This is a woman who had a very good job. She lost her job. She lost her house, and she ended up taking whatever money she had out of, a little bit of money out of retirement, I believe, and then her unemployment benefits to support herself and her two kids, bought a very small trailer, and she lives in like a 20-foot trailer with two kids now. And that's what she's doing. But rather than, you know, try and live off the system, she's doing that. She's, you know, doing odd jobs, doing what she can to make a living. That's what these people did. This is a person who's going to come out on top again. You know, she's not going to be in that place forever. And she's learning new tools, new systems. She's figuring out what she can do. It's worthwhile reading just to see what people are doing. It's, you know, again, it's if you go to theboxcarkids.wordpress.com, you'll definitely see how these people are making it and what they're doing to come back.
Okay, you guys can check that out, because this is one, to me, you know, I've had this conversation with many guests about, you know, the forcing function of the recession. Is to me, it's similar to what's happened on smaller scales in other industries over the last 20, 25 years, when Ma Bell broke up and Silicon Valley and all these other industries, you know, the whole downsizing thing in the 90s. To me, it always inspires inspiration eventually, because you have to adapt. And the ones that basically were sort of passengers on the train that just thought that they had, you know, a place to go to work for the next 40 years, and all of a sudden that place wasn't there anymore, and they had to kind of think on their feet, and they never had to think on their feet. Those are the ones that get the, you know, deer in the headlights, and because they didn't have any other skills except getting up and getting to work on time. And we're in an industry now where, and an economy now, where, like you said, your brother, it's much more about lateral thinking than it is about going forward and backward on the same track and being able to say, well, I need to get from here to there, and that road is closed, so I have to develop an alternate path. And because of social media, because of these platforms, you don't have to even know anybody in your town. You can just get on, like, so get on Craigslist or get on with some of these other things, or just on Twitter search, for God's sakes. Just put a couple of slashes in and say, help, you know, and things will come. Information flows all over the place up there. I don't think anyone really understands the power of this thing yet, or the lasting effect it's going to have on people, because of the fact that it's still, to me, in the stage where it's more of a toy. It's more an outlet. It's more sort of the novelty is still there. But the people that I see pushing at the edges of it and making it something that has you know, more of a foundational element of the culture are the ones like you that see past this this first wave of you know, the icing before the cake, so to speak. So what do you think is the next step as we get beyond, you know, the invisible boundary of 2012, as these things keep propagating information and keep breaking a lot of the boundaries that we have on the ground, and all these things that are spreading ideas back and forth on the internet start to find more of a topographical kind of stability. Are we going to get to the point where this is old hat, or is this thing going to keep developing new apps and new platforms, and we're going to be going at it for a while with this?
We're going to be going at it for a while, and it's only going to get bigger. What's going to be next is, you know, personal communication, computing devices, that are with people all the time. I mean, you're seeing it in things like the iPad, netbooks, the iPhone, you know, Google's, you know, the Droid. All of those things are closer and closer steps to keeping us connected all the time. And what will happen, though, is we'll seek solace from the connection, and people will, you know, they'll band together again in smaller and smaller social groups so that they can reconnect with their closer friends in a one-on-one format. But they will definitely be, and so for those moments, they'll probably disconnect from the grid, but when they do, they'll be right back in it in a short period of time. And so this is only going to get more and more frequent. It's only going to get more and more pervasive, and people are only going to become more and more effective using the technologies and letting it drive their life.
And you really feel this is ultimately going to be a healthy thing, that people, because what I see happening is people not developing better social skills offline and relying on some of these tools online to substitute for what would be, you know, normal conversation, because of the fact that you have a lot more ways to sort of shield the impact of things online than you don't do when it's a face-to-face sale. And I you know, that movie, the Up in the Air movie last year with George Clooney, you know, was sort of the best example I can give you of that, is that are we at a point now where relating to our customers is, or relating to our base or our consumer base, whatever you want to call it, is secondary to having technology to reach them?
Well, relating to other people is always going to be a primary focus of sales and marketers. Relating to people and trying to create relationships with people is what they're going to do. How they do it is just, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, they're platform agnostic when it comes to that. What they're looking at, though, is how do I do it with the most people, easiest, with the largest sense of intimacy, and that's what they're figuring out right now.
Okay. Because you know, one of the challenges in healthcare is that, you know, just like when you're dealing with a client lawyer, when you're dealing with patient and doctor, that is such a private relationship that as this Health 2.0 boots up and you've got 10-25% of the field in terms of doctors getting out of practice because of the fact that there's no more money for them, especially the new ones coming out, and going more into, you know, boutique care or when they do, like, you know, retainer care, and they have smaller and smaller practice groups, and they work with them online more. Is that something you see as being a product of the system, or that you think that's a necessary step in order to maintain that depth? Because what I see is if you have more volume, like you let 37 million more people into the waiting room, and, you know, a third or a quarter of the practitioners are shutting down, retiring early, getting out, marginalizing their practices because there's no more money, you're either going to get low-quality care for a lot more people, or you're going to get high-quality care for a very small amount of people. It's almost like it warps the mountain range a little bit.
And, well, that's sort of the free market system, and healthcare was bound to figure that out. You know, the healthcare system in this country has been broken for a very long time, and
yeah.
So, you know, the reality of it is that people who can afford good health care get it. People who can't, don't. And someplace in the middle is where most of us land. And ultimately, you know, I think that there's going to be an evolution in health care and an evolution in medicine that allows for people. You know, we're going to go back, probably see a lot more of the boutique medicine, see a lot more of the family doctors. You know, one of the things that's happening is that companies now are self-funding their insurance, and rather than putting that into insurance for the doctors, are creating their own clinics. You get 5 or 10 companies that are worth about $10 million each. They put up their own money to self-fund. They hire a doctor, they hire a staff, they build a small clinic, and they can now provide all the health care they need to every one of their, you know, every one of their employees, short of major hospital visits. And then they're self-funded insurance that way. So they get very, very, very good care, way better care than they could ever get from Blue Cross or Blue Shield or HMO, and they still get the service of a hospital. And so those are the kind of things that people are looking at, those innovations that will drive medicine in the future.
Sounds like it's copying like the model of pro sports, having, you know, the team of doctors that take care of their athletes and I don't know what the future is in terms of what's going to happen outside the mainstream. Because every time we talk about healthcare, everyone just forgets that we're talking about allopathic, mainstream, Western medicine, not the alternative stuff that's always outside those boundaries.
But it's on the grow.
Well,
people are turning back to that very quickly.
Yeah, like I said, I think those cheaper, more accessible alternatives that are going to be regulated by the mainstream because of the fact that they don't use that stuff, it's almost like you're back to, like you said, the small village kind of Doc Hollywood kind of practices where you're going to have 400 or 500 people basically with one doc getting very exclusive care, but it's going to be kind of like localized. And if you're saying that the next level up is sort of this corporate sort of like, okay, we'll put a bubble around this, we'll build the clinic for you. As a practitioner 20 years in the field, you know, I could just put my resume out. I'm gun for hire. But I'd love to see it where we put the emphasis more on health education rather than on service, because ultimately, just like we talked about at the top with the infomercial with the ab thing, the little rocking chair thing, is that people have gotten used to being, you know, sort of pushing the responsibility of their health outside themselves or outside their lifestyles anyway. And there's no accountability because there's a market for suffering. You know,
there's a market for suffering because there are many, many people who are looking for an easy, simple life. They're looking for the magic bullet. They want to be able to eat what they want, never exercise, do whatever they want to do, and then in 2 minutes a day be able to fix their problem before their heart attacks them and kills them.
Yeah, and again, because of the fact that when we're living longer, we're not living well, you've got a whole generation about, you know, the boomers are getting close to 60. They're all going to start slowly starting to get off the stage. Hopefully, you guys just keep moving. But the country as a whole is going to get older, more drug dependent, you know, with years and years of all these things accumulating. And I just don't know if there's going to be enough care in the healthcare system to address all this, even if it is all boutiqued up like you're saying. The ultimate solution is to get them to be educated about how do you live a 100-year lifestyle proactively and be more responsible for your health, not legislated if you eat a hamburger and all out of the garbage, but how do you, as a marketer, how do you sell somebody on a long-term gain for a bunch of behaviors that are not socially reinforced, they're not real sexy and rewarding, and they're extremely vanilla? You know,
well,
I talk about breathing and moving 80% of the time.
I think that's the wrong question. The question is, how do you find marketers who are efficient enough to kill the marketing machine that's designed to cause that dependence in consumers? You've got to find marketers first who have the wherewithal, the means, and the real reason to compete with the other kind of marketing from the corporations and companies that are designed to create dependence, that are designed to sell things that are unhealthy, like cigarettes and, you know, all of those kind of things that we know kill us and that work against the kind of education you're talking about. So you first got to find qualified, competent marketers who can then go out and create messaging and have the, you know, the funding to distribute those messages in a way that educates the public in mass, because it's not going to happen in small groups.
Yeah, I see all the cancer prevention stuff and all the, you know, the baseball over the weekend had the Mother's Day thing with the pink bats and all that stuff for the, you know, the breast cancer. I just see it still being focused on avoiding disease, avoiding inevitabilities, and not talking about something that's a tangible, you know, a palatable target. And it seems to always go down the scale from wellness to health to fitness to just getting in shape. So it's like we go down the food chain, and they usually trot out some pixie, you know, in a bikini and say, look like me. And everybody else is like, no, I don't look like you. I don't want to. And so it always seems like the target and the task are very far apart. So you're saying if you need some slick marketers that are going to make a process that might take you 15 or 20 years to get long-term benefits, are you selling the 30-year mortgage? You know, do you need those kinds of guys that are going to be able to market something? Hey, 30, you're 25 years old, you know, you're just out of college and stuff, you're going to be working in the market for 40 years or so, this is what you need to do in order to stay healthy. Who's going to hear? At 25 years old, you're Superman. You're not going to listen to them. And even at 45, you're still going, I still got my fastball. How do you get people to think generationally when, you know, they think basically from here to the weekend in the way that they live their lives?
You don't affect them at 25. You affect them at 5.
Right.
You
like I said, you have to get underneath before they even get
right.
in the system.
Right. You have
you're
to
saying
affect
we're
them
20 years away from seeing, yeah, if we started tomorrow, we're 20 years away of seeing the benefits of that marketing.
Right. That's exactly right. or we're 20 years away from seeing even worse conditions than we already have. So,
which we can't absorb. The,
right.
I don't think the culture could. If we went through another generational cycle like now, where you know you've got any number of vaccines in these kids, all kinds of meds in these kids, how many violent scenes do they absorb? Video games, you know, they basically have these lifestyles that they're not moving around very much, and all the childhood diseases that are coming on, all the educational problems. If that went through another turn of the wheel, based on what's ahead of them, what would we be working with in 20 years? Would we even have this conversation? I mean, it just seems like we're at a point now where if we don't at least stem the tide, you know, we're going to stupidville. And I don't know how
I guess I'm not that pessimistic about, I'm not that pessimistic about the future of, you know, of our youth or even of our society.
I'm just saying North America. The rest of the world that isn't indoctrinated in meds, you know.
I'm not even that pessimistic about North America. I'm a little more hopeful than that. But I think that, I think that ultimately what you're saying, though, is accurate, that we've got to really take a look at what is it that we need to do and how do we need to do it in order to support that. Because it's not that people, you know, it's not that people don't want to change, or it's just that it's, you know, what you have intensive marketing that's designed to drive people to make simple, easy choices to, you know, to increase consumerism and to dumb down their choices in a way that they don't have to think about it anymore. And so, you know, the very first step is selling the idea that you're responsible for your own mind, that you have to think for yourself, and you have to make better decisions. And those better decisions come from actually thinking, not thinking that you're thinking by watching television or listening to a talking head.
Right, right. And again, I think for the most part, people aren't really aware of how much their worldview has been installed. I think
right.
They think that their thoughts are their thoughts. And they're not aware that these things have been programmed into them repetitively or repeatedly for a generation of their own life. And now, with the acceleration of, like I said, 10,000 advertisements a day, you're awash in it. So to be aware of any of it is to be aware of a lot of it. And it's like, you know, because it's like, wow, I'm actually aware that I'm being sold here. I mean, just simple things, colors and music and all the little things they do to kind of get in your head. You know, that crazy McDonald's fish song I was playing here a while ago, like a month ago. I mean, it comes out right around Lent, you know, right around, you know, before Easter, because McDonald's knows they're gonna lose a certain amount of business on Fridays, so they start pumping the fish. You know, none of this stuff's a mystery, and it seems kind of draconian as a marketer, and you're very good at being unapologetically draconian as a marketer. You know, one of the phrases that stood out in your last book, How to Sell When Nobody's Buying, is you gave a talk, a coaching talk, and it was basically you find your target market, you find out what their hurt is, what their pain is, and you stick your finger in it and twist it. And I was
right.
Like, wow, this sounds a little bit like, you know, not the nicest thing in the world to do. But because you're going to offer them a solution, it's almost like getting something to threshold. It's kind of a boiled frog thing, it seems. It's like almost like, you know, the old football coach kicking the butt kind of a thing. The marketer,
well, it's the last straw, right? I mean, people are either going to get it and they're going to change or they're not. And that's the thing. When people finally had enough, they'll do something different. And,
right.
You know, when they finally had enough of the pain, they'll buy the solution. And the same is true when you're trying to solve social problems like you're talking about.
Yeah,
you know, when people get fat enough, they'll stop getting fat. When people get... You know, when people get a lot of things, they'll get, you know, they'll choose whatever they choose. But it's, you know,
so you make it a very binary thing because of the fact that you put the crux of the decision right in front of them and basically say, look, here's your problem. You know, this is causing you the pitfalls of all these choices you've made. I'm offering you this solution. And then you got to come across the line to my side to get it. So you're not giving them, quote-unquote, the free lunch or the free two-year subscription to things. You're giving them an opportunity that they have to then seize. Otherwise, the threat still is there. Look, you could ignore the threat. You can mask the threat. You can minimize the threat. But tomorrow morning, you're going to wake up with that threat sitting right in your living room. Or you take this opportunity and follow this and build the trust. So it's almost like instead of doing... The comparison of, you know, of more permission marketing versus interruption marketing, you're doing tough marketing, which is different than soft sell. And soft
right.
sell, to me, is that flowery garbage that law of attraction stuff, and just it makes me sick that everyone buys this crap, and they don't realize they're being sold nothing. And you're
right.
Telling them this problem is real. Your children are suffering. Your family's suffering. Your business is hurting. And you need to get going. And this is the last exit before the bridge. You know, and you're giving them an opportunity. But it is tough marketing because not a lot of people are willing to tell people the truth. It hurts.
Right.
Hurts
right.
Their ears. You know.
Right.
And you're able to do it. So you know, I guess in the minute we have left here, just to kind of sum up everything we're doing here, we're talking with Dave Licani from BoldApproach.com. Can you point out one sort of assumption or one contradiction people have about the current state of marketing that causes all this dichotomy between the trust and the motivation to move, that you could give people walking away from this this interview with, kind of go out tomorrow and look for this or listen for that as they hear their common stream of media going by their ears and their eyes?
Stop thinking that you're smarter than the marketers. You're not, and neither am I. And the first thing I want you to do is I want you to start listening. That's the best thing you can do. Listen to what's being said and ask yourself the question, what's in this message for them and what are they asking me to do and why? And if you ask those questions, and if you ask it of the media too, whether it's the news, you know, what is the purpose of telling me about this horrible tragedy? Do I really need to know? Why is it important? And what is it doing for them? Are they blowing this up even more so that I'll come back, I'll sit here glued to the television to watch the commercials? Or is that their point? Or is their point that this really is so dire that I must know? Because if it's so dire, I must know, they probably don't need commercials in the middle of it.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks for the tip, because I realize that you're on both sides of that coin a lot in your work and coaching people and also dealing with people in the field. So, you know, you're a magician that actually shows us how we're being tricked and then tricks us again, which is to me another kind of magic, another level of magic, I guess, is that.
I like to think that I pick the products and the people that I work with very carefully, but I'm certain there are people who would disagree.
Yeah, well, and you'll let them disagree, which is the beauty of what you do, because most people won't let it rest. And,
well, here's the thing.
Know,
only polarized people buy things, you know? Only polarized people buy things, and I'm happy to be polarizing.
Well, believe me, you are definitely polarizable, and good luck navigating the streets of Montreal tonight, and thanks for joining us tonight here on Somatime, and we appreciate your information.
Thrilled to be here with you as always, Doc.
All right, man. Take care.
Be well. Bye-bye.
All right, Dave Licani sharing a couple of tips. I need to shower. Anyway, that was brutal honesty from Dave. We're supposed to have our first Soma pal on tonight. Now, I'm not sure if she's made it to a phone or something. But let's see. If she calls in, she calls in. We'll hold up our end of the bargain. But I have to actually dial up her information because I have no idea what it is. Let's see. This is weird. So we'll have that in a couple minutes. But, just to kind of sum up what Dave was talking about there, because there was a lot of important things he rattled off. The last piece of Only the Polarized Buy is it's a very direct and bumper sticker kind of thing. If you're in the business of selling, you have to be in the business of buying as well. You have to be able to put yourself in that other side of the coin, the other side of the counter. So when you make small purchases, like I just was over at CVS for the show, getting my snackaroo, and I noticed things about how the cashier is going to process my stuff, and you got your card, okay, and all those things that go on there that are subtle in the grand scheme of things, but they're very overt in the way that's the way that relationship is going to go, okay? Because what they got out of me wasn't just the sale. They got an email for a coupon, and they got this and this and this. All these things came up because of the fact that that I'm engaged with that cashier in the process of buying something less than $10. So if you think about it in terms of selling a car or a house or, something, that's going to be a college admission or something huge, well, don't you think you have to make it a little bit more sort of invest a little more of yourself as a person, not the position or the title or the label that you're trying to promote. People try to sell a sticker. They try to sell a label, a name. You know, car dealerships got away with it for years, and it just doesn't happen anymore. People don't buy into that, you know, Ford. It doesn't mean anything. You can say Ford, Chevy. Nobody cares. They want to deal with that particular person, that particular advertiser. So that's what's up. All right. I guess she's not calling in. Another unreliable guest. Our first Soma pal, I'm going to read some more out this week, but is her name is CJ Lacion, L-A-N-C-I-O-N, and she's at a contest down south. Wanted to promote that for her. She made it through the first round last week. Unfortunately, she did not call in. We might have her on next week if we find her. I don't know. She's in the second round of this contest. But she's down at Newport News, down in Virginia. And I don't know what the heck's going on here. Seems like something changed. Anyway, so you can find her at cjlacione.com. She's been a Hooters girl for a while. Of course, we had the lovely and talented Shannon Bickel back on a couple months ago, so we're trying to help her out. She's in a contest with a radio station down south. Then she did make it through the first round, FM 99's Rock Girl Top 16. So I wanted to talk to her because she had an issue about images on Facebook. Now, this is someone who makes her living, you know, being able to promote her image. And she does, you know, the gamut. You're down there, you do everything. You do car shows, you do everything. You know, supermarket openings. I think there's an MMA event in there that she does. And she has a policy. You can't use my image anywhere. You know, she's photos on her Facebook page, but you can't use her images anywhere without, you know, without any permission. It was interesting. I wanted to get into that because Facebook, Twitter, websites, all that open source stuff has now gone the other way. Now it's become, you know, sort of like a gated community. And I wanted to get into that with her a little bit as one of my Soma pals. So I guess she's not around. Let's see if, nope, she did not find the dial. So we'll wave goodbye and see if she's around down the line. But let's take a look over at Twitter and see if I got anything interesting to say, because I got a couple minutes here left, and I'm going to play us out with a little George Carlin tonight here on Suspicious Radio. What's going on? Yeah, I'm in trouble. Anyway. So it's been a rough week. You know, like I said, you got stuff flying off the shelves. Let me see if I can dig that story up quick about the pharmaceutical stuff that was pulled off the shelves. I want to know exactly which brands. It was a child, let's see, over-the-counter meds recalled. It was in Pennsylvania, I think, and then it became nationwide. Here we go. Called, oh, wow, Associated Press, right on it. There's a bunch of them because, you know, there was, I think, four or five brands here. Tylenol Plus, Motrin, Zytec, and Benadryl were recalled. More than 40 over-the-counter infant and child liquids medications being recalled in the United States and 11 other countries. This is amazing. Particles in them. And stop. Oh, my God. I mean, like I said, if you're marketing one of these are over-the-counter. Tylenol Plus, Motrin. These things are consumed in mass quantities. And they recall them saying they didn't meet quality standards. And there's some products recalled that may have a higher concentration of an active ingredient. If this happened in the holistic community, remember the tryptophan thing in the 80s? That sucker came off the market. They banned it. And they've got pretty popular items are basically, you know, out there causing all kinds of chemical stress to the whole population of kids. Nobody is screaming about it. I just, it's amazing. They're Teflon. They're freaking Teflon. Back to Twitter. So let's see. Oh, right, the Phillies. How could I forget? How could I forget? Since it's Suspicious Radio. Let's see. I want to see what that, because the Phillies, one of my favorite teams, was nabbed. Suspicious behavior. It's great. Oh, boy. Out in Colorado, the Phillies have a new enemy, right? And I think the enemy is themselves. What happened here? This thing just went backwards on me. The lovely and talented Phillies, winners of World Series and a National League pennant, they have a new controversy. They're kind of a punky team. Remember last week we had the taser gun incident? Now with their fans? Well, this week, another thing happened with them. I'll explain in a second. But a couple days ago, the Colorado Rockies alleged that the Phillies bullpen coach was using binoculars to steal signs from the catcher in the ninth inning of the 9-5 Philly win. The conspiracy theory got a little added weight after television cameras captured Shane Victorino chatting to someone on the bullpen phone in the dugout. Through cameras showed Bill Meyer using binoculars. Charlie Manning said the coach was just using binoculars to check the positioning of his catcher. Tracy Ringsleberry of Fox Sports first broke the story Wednesday. Major League Baseball issuing a warning, said the league can't say for certain, and Victorino was talking about something more nefarious than their theories of the final season of Lost. Oh, my God. And the thing is, today, the dopey coach makes an accusation about the Mets having a home record, and we should look into the Mets now. Yeah, stick it. You know, and for the Phillies, they get a Batman out of that. They got it. Where are they? Okay. And to the Phillies.
You filthy criminies.
That's right. So there you go. I don't know what to tell you about that. But again, they also got the benefit of the fact that the G20 summit that's coming up in Toronto, they're moving the games to Philadelphia. So Philly gets three more home games, even though they're going to play the road team's role and play by American League rules. They get three more games in Philadelphia because of the G20 summit. So it doesn't get any worse. Doesn't get any worse. Meanwhile, the Flyers are beating the Bruins. They just got stopped on a penalty shot here in the third period. Great save by the Bruin goalie. Still 2-0 Flyers. So we've got the Montreal freaking Canadiens are going to be in the East Conference Finals against Philly or Boston here. We've got 7 minutes to go. Otherwise, they're going to go to Game 7 on, I guess, Friday night. Wow. They were down 3-0, too. Bruins are playing well. All of a sudden, they fell apart. And the Flyers had a goalie hurt and everything. This is strange. And the Flyers got in the playoffs beating the Rangers in the last game of the season. So you could have a situation where you have the 7-8 team, you know, playing for the Stanley Cup. It's wild. Look at this. Long pass. Okay. So I guess that's it. That's it for that stuff. Oh, but he said a lot of things I just had to think out loud about. See if I could find me some George Carlin to sum it up. Because it was one of those shows where you see all this strife and all this suffering going on, and a lot of people basically capitalizing on it. I don't know if that's wrong, or bad, or you know not cool, but it just seems like it just seems excessive. I guess is the word, excessive. So I don't know how you really get around that. Let's see if I can find something on George Carlin about these disasters, because I just see this being, you know, something that as a culture, we enjoy it. We love watching stuff fall apart. You know, remember a couple months ago, the tsunami in Hawaii, you know, after the earthquake down in Brazil, it was, you know, they were watching the Hawaii shores waiting for the tsunami to hit. What if it hit? It just seems a little strange that we were all watching it. I feel, you know, it's like, well, what's wrong with us? But apparently what, you know, and I'm realizing this, it's sort of an Anto's world in a way. You know, even though the filos are out there following them, it just seems like there's a tension, I guess is the word, for things to go wrong, you know, and if people to watch this. Let's see, here's a death and dying, don't pull the plug, dumb Americans. Extreme behavior. Go buy album. Should have looked this up before, too. But I didn't. There's so much George Carlin to play, it's not even funny. There's so much on here. Oh, my God. But he does a specific bit about, about disasters and stuff. I thought it was in the You're All Diseased. see if it's down here. Gotta kind of, you know, wind it down. There's a no God one. Hey, advertising lullaby, that might be a starter. I'll play a couple of Georges here. I don't know. What the heck do I know? 10:24 at summertime. Winding it down. Thanks to David Connie for straightening us out tonight. Here's a little George. I'll get started with this.
Now, a lot of these company names and product names are influenced by marketing and advertising people. And this next thing is about advertising. This is called advertising lullaby. Keeping in mind, of course, that the whole purpose of advertising is to lull you to sleep. Quality, value, style, service, selection, convenience, economy, savings, performance, experience, hospitality, low rates, friendly service, name brands, key terms, affordable prices, money-back guarantee, free installation. Free admission, free appraisal, free alterations, free delivery, free estimates, free home trial, and free parking. No cash, no problem, no kidding. No fuss, no muss, no risk, no obligation, no red tape, no down payment, no entry fee, no hidden charges, no purchase necessary, no one will call on you, no payments or interest. September. But limited time only, though, so act now, order today, send no money, offer good while supplies last, two to a customer, each item sold separately, batteries not included, mileage may vary, all sales are final, allow 6 weeks for delivery, some items not available, some assembly required, some restrictions may apply. So come on in. So come on in for a free demonstration and a free consultation with our friendly professional staff. Our experienced and knowledgeable sales representatives will help you make a selection that's just right for you and just right for your budget. And say, don't forget to pick up your free gift, a classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high quality premium select gourmet pocket pencil sharpener. Yours for the asking, no purchase necessary. It's our way of saying thank you. And if you act now, we'll include an extra added free complimentary bonus gift, a classic deluxe custom designer luxury prestige high-quality premium select gourmet combination key ring, magnifying glass, and garden hose in a genuine imitation leather-style carrying case with authentic vinyl trim. Yours for the asking, no purchase necessary. It's our way of saying thank you. Actually, it's our way of saying bend over just a little bit farther so we can stick this big advertising dick up your ass a little bit deeper. A little bit deeper. A little bit deeper. You miserable, no good fucking consumer asshole.
There you go. All right. Well, I'm gonna give you a double shot of George here on a Wednesday night to play us out. Thanks for joining us here in Summertime this week, and we're back next week with a little lighter topic. Ooh, I don't know about lighter, but it'll definitely be a different topic. We're going to have Rick Leskowitz on talking about rivalries and the biology of the Yankee-Red Sox war. So we'll be renewing that next week. We have a canned interview with him we're going to do on Tuesday afternoon. We'll play it back on Wednesday night. Taking your calls and comments. Maybe we'll have a Summer Pal on. We have all kinds of things to do here in Summertime, of course. Whatever. Tomorrow's a new moon. Anger in the future. Can you deal? Check me out on summertime.org, or you can get a hold of me directly at nakedsoma@gmail.com. This is your host, Dr. Mark, wishing you well and be yourself and all that. And thank you for his time and your space. Back to George. Play us out, man. Little American bullshit.
Because you do know, folks, you do know, living in this country, you know that every time you're exposed to advertising, you realize once again that America's leading industry, America's most profitable business, is still the manufacture, packaging, distribution, and marketing of bullshit. High quality, grade A, prime cut, pure American bullshit. And the sad part is, most people seem indoctrinated to believe that bullshit only comes from certain places, certain sources. Advertising, politics, salesmen, not true. Bullshit is everywhere. Bullshit is rampant. Parents are full of shit, teachers are full of shit, clergymen are full of shit, and law enforcement people are full of shit. This entire country is completely full of shit,
and always has been, from the Declaration of Independence to the Constitution to the Star-Spangled Banner. It's really nothing more than one big steaming pile of red, white, and blue all-American bullshit. Because think of how we started. Think of that. This country was founded by a group of slave owners who told us all men are created equal. Oh, yeah, all men, except for Indians and niggers and women, right? Always like to use that authentic American language. This was a small group of unelected white male landholding slave owners who also suggested their class be the only one allowed to vote. Now that is what's known as being stunningly and embarrassingly full of shit. And I think Americans really show their ignorance when they say they want their politicians to be honest. What are these fucking cretins talking about? If honesty were suddenly introduced into American life, the whole system would collapse. No one would know what to do. Honesty would fuck this country up. And I think deep down Americans know that. That's why they elected and reelected Bill Clinton. You betcha. You betcha. Yeah. Because the American people like their bullshit right out front where they can get a good, strong whiff of it. Clinton might be full of shit, but at least he let you know it. Doesn't he? Dole tried to hide it, didn't he? Dole kept saying, I'm a plain and honest man. Bullshit. People don't believe that. What did Clinton say? He said, hi, folks, I'm completely full of shit, and how do you like that? And the people said, you know something? At least he's honest. At least he's honest about being completely full of shit.
Boozy, boozy, bop, city bop.
Spiral on, sapiens.